Hello, hello, and good evening and afternoon and whatever time zone it is when you're listening to this. I'm Rachel and I have Molly here with me.
What's up? And we are playing with three different time zones today because Rachel's in Central Time, I'm in Eastern Time, and we have a very special guest today who is all the way over in the UK. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm in the northwest of England even as we speak.
Yes, we've got
Northwest of England.
Clint Haycock today with the Mindshift podcast. We're really excited to do a little crossover episode for y'all. Thanks for joining us.
Looking forward to it.
And then this episode is going to be two parts. So the first part you're going to hear on here, and then you're going to have to head over to Clint's podcast, which is called Mindshift. And you'll have to listen to part two over there. So you have a PhD in biblical studies, I believe.
It's true. That's what brought us over here to the UK. And I did a PhD at the University of Chester, which is kind of near Liverpool up in that area. So yeah, that was about 18 years ago now. It's hard to believe it's been that long, but I've got my citizenship and all that. I'm never going back. They can have it. Sorry. America, love it or leave it.
It's awful here.
This has nothing to do with the episode, but like how? Because I want to. How do we leave America?
This is actually a podcast about how you can move internationally.
We want to be expats. There's a lot of us here, but yeah, it's a difficult and very expensive process for sure, because we had to stay here for 10 years before we could apply for indefinite leave to remain. And then after that, we can get our citizenship. So I'm divorced now, but my ex-wife and my daughters, they've all got their citizenship. So we're never going back.
You gave them a gift. You gave your daughters a gift.
We think of it that way. They are never going back to America. They've lived here longer than they lived in the States growing up.
I'm still really angry at my parents for making me leave Mexico. I grew up in Mexico as a missionary kid. When I was 18, they had just dropped this new law that if you were in Mexico and you were 18 or older and you had been there for at least two to four consecutive years, I'm not sure on that, you could apply for a residential visa, which would mean that you wouldn't have to renew it as often as you had to renew like a W-4 work visa, which was what we were on. So I was like, can I apply for this? Like, I would love to become a residential citizen, essentially. Like, you're not a citizen, but like, you're allowed to reside there. And you can work for Mexican companies and businesses. You don't have to work for an American business. And they were like, no, you need to come back to the States and get an American education.
Oh, wow. You're like, oh, now you care about my education.
Right. Yeah. You homeschooled me my whole life, but now you want me to get a
homeschooled and house-churched. And you're like, oh, you actually give a shit about that. Right.
I'm like, Mexico.
Why now?
Also, Mexico has some of the best universities in the world. Like, their education is like top tier. Their public school system's shit, but so is everywhere
I was gonna
in America.
Say, I'm sure homeschooling was the better option there. But
yes. But like, as far as college goes, I would have been able to pay like, it's disgusting, like $50 a semester.
To go cheap.
To one of the best colleges, like universities out there, and like get like a pre-med degree if I wanted, like, you know.
Yeah, for nothing, basically.
Neither here nor there. We are in the United States. Still don't have a college degree, so.
It's expensive. Yeah, you could go into debt. I mean, I went to Bible college and all that, and it took me years and years to pay that loans off and everything. So, yeah. It's an expensive proposition, just getting an education.
Away.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know. How ironic.
How did that feel, going to Bible college, spending all of that money on a religious education, and then being like, I don't believe this anymore. I don't agree with this anymore. I'm not going to do this anymore. And you're just like looking back at your life choices like,
really?
Like, the worst I have is I still have my college Bible. Like, you know,
you got it right there.
I know. Well, we recorded with it the other day. But
no, she's still as you do.
I don't have hundreds of thousands of debt of college, like Bible college, to like look at me like that. I made that choice because of my faith.
Yep. I was fortunate in the sense that I only took out loans my first 2 years of Bible college. After that, I went through the last 2 years, all my seminary degrees and all that, by paying as I went. So I worked really hard and saved money. So I didn't have like hundreds of thousands to pay back, but it was still, you know, several thousand. And I was able to get it deferred and deferred, but I was still paying on it, even though we were living over here in the UK. So I only paid it off maybe 10, 12 years ago. So it was hanging around that long.
Did it
student
like
student loans or
every time you looked at your student loan, you had like flashbacks, like,
you know, it wasn't so much that because at the time I still felt like my undergraduate degree was worth something in the sense that, you know, in terms of employability, but I've since not only walked away from the faith, obviously that meant my job as a Bible college teacher over here. I was teaching about 8 years at a Bible college up in Liverpool and in Leeds. I would go up there every week and teach. And my new job, I teach carpentry skills. Luckily, I have a degree from the States as a carpenter at a community college, which is a lifesaver because that's what I do for a living. And when I went to my last job, I still had to do all my level two math and English. They didn't accept my Bible college transcripts, even though I'd done university level math and English. So that was where it really was annoying, you know, because I spent all that time and effort doing those subjects in Bible college, and they were literally not worth the paper they were written on.
Well, that kids, that's your go-to, get a trade. Yep. I got a trade. I've been making money and paying for my life since I was a youngin. You were able to survive because of a trade because your Bible college gave you nothing.
I was fortunate. Yeah. Cause I'd been in the Navy. So I got the GI Bill. So that paid for 2 years of my, you know, community college education. And I'm still using that trade all these decades later. So that's one of the most valuable skills that I consider I possess. Because I've always made a living as a carpenter and a builder, and now as a teacher.
So you're Jesus.
Amazing.
Yep.
You're Jesus. That's right. You're basically Jesus.
But you're an expat Jesus. I wonder what the Republicans would feel about that.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not get into Republicans. Or let's get into Republicans. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that was one of my last straws, though, the Trump evangelical thing. Yeah. Probably in the run-up to the 2016, I was kind of still as a progressive Christian. But when I saw that developing in 2015, I just said, I don't want to have anything to do with being a Christian, being called a Christian ever again. That was the final straw. And I think that's true of, I don't know, maybe tens of thousands, millions of ex-evangelicals like me. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the last straw when they saw that happening.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So my question, so I understand that because I was definitely one of those who was like, I don't want to be affiliated with a Christian church at all in 2015, 2016. Yeah. But at that point, I had also been questioning like a lot of my beliefs. So I wasn't necessarily living a Christian lifestyle or pursuing Christian philosophies or like ways of, I don't know, like I just like wasn't really like buying into it anymore as much. So like my faith had already been kind of going out the window. And like that last bit was like, just like the emotional tie to Christianity because, you know, and the cultural tie to it, because of the way I was raised, my family. And then like 2016 came and it was like, yeah, no, I'm not a part of this. But like, what about for you? Had you already been kind of slipping in your faith? You had already been backsliding, you know, like,
yeah.
What was that like for you?
Definitely, I would say deconstructing. I'd been deconstructing, going back to when I was a pastor of a church in Portland, Oregon for about, well, I was there 12 years in total. I started going there when we were in Bible college in Portland, and then I ended up becoming the head elder, head pastor. But the last couple years, I was reading sort of like progressive Christian authors. So I would say that's when my deconstruction kind of officially began, because I started questioning and then jettisoning a lot of my fundamentalist beliefs that I was raised to believe were absolutely true. And I believed them all 100%, no doubt. So it was a long process. It took years and years. But yeah, you're right. I was just on the very lunatic fringes, you know, of the whole thing when I saw the Trump thing happening. And I was like, just disgusted by it. Like, I thought, I'm seeing through the guy. Why can't these evangelicals see through him? And not only that, they've obviously supported him rabidly and all the rest of it. We all know the story.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel, when did you like, what year was it when you were like, okay, I'm done? Like, and like walked away fully? Was it 2016, like with the Trump elections?
It was probably around, it was some point in Trump's presidency for sure, because I actually found Clint's podcast around then as well, because you had a lot of good information on Trump. You talked to, I wrote it down. What is her name?
Sarah Posner.
Yeah. So I listened to that episode with her, and I tried to get through the book she wrote. It was really dense,
yeah.
I guess, for me. Like, it was really good, but I think my problem was I listened to it on audiobook, and whoever did the narrating, I was like, this is...
Wasn't
this
good.
Is, this it's not true. Good. It wasn't
you have
her.
To have a good
it wasn't
narrator.
Her. Yeah, it was almost like too robotic. Hmm. Anyway, so I would say I was definitely deconstructing during that time, found your podcast. I don't know how I found it. I went through like a whole like string mm-hmm. of podcasts, starting with The Thinking Atheist. And then it just sort of like spiraled from there. But you had a lot of good stuff on Trump, because as I was deconstructing as well, I was seeing, you know, like my mom and the entire house church I grew up in. And everyone's like, oh my God, Trump. And I was like, this guy is fucking psycho. Yeah,
what's going on here?
Like, what? And then, but then I realized I was probably using my critical thinking skills that you don't have when you are a fundamentalist Christian, because you are, you know, just sort of taught to go along with what, you know, the whole herd is thinking. It's like herd, you know, hive mind thinking. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that was, I think, probably crucial as well for me to sort of just watch how much, you know, Republicans, but mostly just like evangelicals were just saying Trump was incredible. And I was like, he's literally doing the opposite of everything you guys believe in, you know, or supposed to believe in, like literally. In the Bible, like, you know, Jesus'
teachings. The exact opposite.
It just wasn't computing for me. And I was like, I don't think Christianity is about this, actually. I don't think that we're actually here trying to do good. I think that we are designed at this point in this thinking to just follow, you know, when things sound good, when you're using the right words, the right lingo, the right, you know, whatever. I mean, he labeled himself a Christian, and then there was like the whole, his advisor, I don't remember her name, but she had that weird, like speaking in tongues thing that went viral.
Oh yeah,
I forgot her name.
Paula White Cain.
Yeah, yeah,
yep.
And that
I've
stuff
blacked out like, through that whole presidency. I don't remember any of it.
You blanked just like, it out.
I was like, dude, no. I wish I blacked out. I was like, it just kept coming, and I was like, what? And then
what
they like
happening?
Stormed the fucking Capitol, and I was like, what? And okay, everyone
Rachel,
was like,
in the name of Jesus.
I was living in Kentucky when January 6th insurrection happened. And there were like people in my life, like coworkers and like people I knew who were like, I should be there. I need to storm the castle.
I should be there.
Trump is
they're
the
doing
president.
The Lord's work up
yeah,
there.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, I need to fight for what I believe in. And I was like, oh my God, I work with
no,
you.
No, you're just
I work
trying
with
to
you.
Rip apart democracy. That's what you're doing.
She was like, yeah. I was going to be there. I planned on driving out there to DC to storm the castle. Okay.
Should have been there.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah, because I was already doing a lot of work on like the dominion theology angle before that. And then that's all these things for me, the threads came together. What you just described, why did Christians embrace Trump so rabidly? A lot of it goes back to, I think, this idea that Christians are mandated to take dominion over the world. And that's been a longstanding belief. And they saw Trump and still do see Trump as their means to achieve dominion. So what the end justifies the means, basically, for them. It's like, we don't care. We've overlooked everything he does and says and stands for and all the rest of it, as
God
long
forgives.
As he gets us to where we need to be.
Yeah.
So we can screw all that. We need to get, you know, behind this guy 100%.
That's true. Cause I guess we all were waiting for Jesus to do something similar, you know, like they wanted him to, you know, overthrow the Romans and that empire. And they wanted them, you know, to be their savior. And, you know, and that's not what he did at all. So I guess that, that makes sense. I've never thought about that way that we've literally just been waiting for the next person to come along.
Look at QAnon, for example, that blew up during the Trump presidency. And it's a very apocalyptic, I think I call it a cult. It's really a cult of QAnon, which
totally
a lot of evangelicals are embracing as well. And it's a very apocalyptic type thing. I look at it as sort of a prophetic, you know, cult, basically, where they say Trump was going to usher in kind of an end of the world scenario, whereby he was going to triumph over his enemies, and all these liberals are going to, you know, be transported to Guantanamo Bay. I mean, just it gets crazy, but that's a similar kind of mentality, isn't it?
Well, I mean, they're not totally wrong. It's just not Trump that's bringing it in. It's just, you know, global warming.
It's also like almost the end of a 250-year empire. You know, what are we, what do we have 3 years left? What are we in 247? Technically,
history repeats itself.
Our world power is ending for America. But, but you know, that's actually just the cycle of history, you know?
And
so,
yeah, the Christianity as a religion is, well, in America, the numbers are declining, aren't they? Mm-hmm. I think that's another aspect to it. Like you're saying, the Christians are going, whoa, man, we're declining. We've got to fight and claw every possible way we can to maintain power. I mean, look at the Roe versus Wade. To me, that's that's the explanation behind that, isn't it? They had enough judges on the Supreme Court to overturn Roe versus Wade in a desperate bid to maintain control. And now they're taking aim at LGBTQ rights and everything else, women's rights and all the rest of it. That's their next target on the list.
Recently, I have started prioritizing my health and wellness habits, like exercising, eating better, and hydrating. Sometimes drinking 96 ounces of water a day can be a lot to do. That's why I like to use Liquid IV to give me some help with my hydration goals. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, Liquid IV hydrates 2 times faster than water alone. Plus, you can keep your daily routine exciting with 3 new flavors. White peach, green grape, and lemon lime, so you can switch it up and make your taste buds happy. I like to use it before a workout, when I'm feeling run down, or after a long night out because your girl is too old for hangovers. I love Liquid IV's convenient packaging. It's individual and ready to go, so you can just be your hydrated and fabulous self. I know I feel better when I'm hydrated. And if you're wondering about the sugar, honey, don't. It's sugar-free. There are no artificial sweeteners and zero sugar, with a proprietary amino acid allulose blend for a sweet taste without the calories or raised blood glucose levels you get from sugar. It's non-GMO and free from gluten, dairy, and soy. Get 20% off when you grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free or any other variant at liquidiv.com and use code CHEERS at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code CHEERS at liquidiv.com.
What's so interesting is I saw this video on TikTok about this lady was talking about how the Trump getting elected was the boomers' last temper tantrum. It's the last,
last fit.
Yeah, it's the last temper tantrum. And like overturning Roe versus Wade is like the last temper tantrum. It's like, we're gonna just put someone really shitty in office and we're gonna throw in all these shitty policies that you're gonna have to spend the next 4 presidencies cleaning up after us.
Yeah, just a giant middle finger to everyone that's not an white evangelical.
They did it in America's Greatest Generation, everyone who like fought in World War II and all of this, they brought in Reagan right before they all, you know, died. So it's like that was their last temper tantrum. Yeah. But
They turned on Jimmy Carter. That's what's so funny about it. He was actually a Christian,
right?
You know, Carter. He was a genuine evangelical.
Wasn't doing what they wanted him to do.
Exactly.
He
was too liberal for him when they finally got him into office. Wait a minute, the guy's a liberal. You know what? We can't have that. So then they got behind Reagan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's crazy to watch it all, how it went down for the last 5-6 decades.
Yeah. It's just like one huge power grab, power struggle every election. This next one, I'm like, I feel like the choices just keep getting worse. They just keep getting older.
Yeah.
Because, and I think that's part of it too, because, you know, I'm assuming Joe Biden is probably really easy to control in his state of mind. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, yeah.
He's just like a puppet.
He's not really there.
You've got to wonder, is he all there? Yeah,
like no one capable of running the country.
He'll like go up to random babies at like events and they like have to, Mr. President, they like have to move because he's
come
like
away
trying
from
to
the baby.
They're like, get away from the baby. I don't know what that's about.
Maybe this is his time. Babies. He's an old man. He's just here to kiss babies.
The jokes are that he's like actually a lizard person and he eats babies. And so he's like smelling them and he's like, oh, I'm hungry. And he's forgetting that he's in his human suit.
He's just a senile old man. That's all. Let's not bring up lizard people. People's imagination.
Are hysterical.
They're so hysterical, and they Yeah. Well, and what's not funny is people are taking them so seriously. That's because I love conspiracy theories, right? Like I love,
they're funny.
Yeah. We love to read about them. We love to discuss them. Like what if, but we know at the end of the day, we're not full-heartedly believing in them. And that's what's scary. But you know, it is mostly Christians, but that makes sense again, because critical thinking filter is off, you know,
well, this is it. Yeah. When I was doing a lot of research and episodes on QAnon, and I realized that I did some research on this, and I discovered that Christians, they're primed for conspiracy theories because of their belief system. So, for example, you could say, well, okay, Genesis, the creation account, the real, you know, scientists have suppressed the truth. They don't want you to know that the earth is actually 6 to 10,000 years old. And so you're already into conspiratorial type thinking from the beginning. They don't want you to know the truth. You know, we're here to get you the actual story here. You know, they've suppressed it. And so they're more likely to believe things like QAnon. And that's just built, baked into the DNA of the system.
Yeah.
What's really interesting is, you know, we're talking about these kind of like concepts that the average Trumper doesn't even understand that they're falling for.
Yeah. Well, they're in they're in a cult as well. I would say it's the cult of Trump.
Like they're not considering like, oh, we want to usher in a new, like they talk about the whole like New World Order and stuff. And it's like, they're trying to prevent the New World Order and they're not thinking
they're trying to create dominance.
Like they're not thinking, they're not thinking in the way that we're seeing it. We're like, oh my God, that's what that is. You know, that's fucked up. They're not seeing it that way. They're just doing it. And it's like, I don't see them like cognitively thinking about what is actually happening on the grander scheme. They just see is Trump's a Republican. He represents Christians. He's pro-life. He's, you know, he is going to fix the economy. That's all they're thinking about. They're not seeing the way that we're seeing it. Yeah. And so like, I sometimes, because I live in the Bible Belt and I live around a bunch of Trumpers, when I talk to them, their intelligence level a lot of times isn't this, it's not matching mine. Like the questions I'm asking them, they're not there.
They're just repeating something else someone else said. Like that's all I hear when I listen to them.
It's a regurgitation. It's a regurgitation. And like you see these interviews online and videos where guys will like ask Trump supporters at Trump rallies, like, what do you think Trump is going to do for the world? And you know, like
Jordan Klepper is brilliant.
They're saying the weirdest shit.
They're saying like third grade level stuff. And I'm like, these people are not all there. They're not, he's going after poor
America. Well, and I think that's the target though, too, is like people that maybe like states that have lower education or, you know, things like that. Like a lot of those states are Republican because they are less educated. And I think that with the banning of the books and, you know, all this other stuff that's happening, they want to keep them that way because the less, you know, educated you are, the easier you are to control.
And not only that, it's easy to get them really like in that fear. I feel like a lot of the Republicans I've been around, they're like very afraid and fearful
of the liberals.
You know, the way that newer generations, younger generations are bringing in a lot of like change. And I want to like just stay in like a heart of, okay, like I'm understanding that your worldview is so narrow. And I'm understanding that like, you've never been shown anything else and that you may not know that you're being controlled through fear tactics and manipulation. Yeah. Like they're not bad people is like what I'm trying to say.
No,
they don't know
not.
The it's harm true. That they are doing on behalf of someone who's quite smart and knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, have you read any of Jen Senko's work? You know, The Brainwashing of My Dad?
No.
That's a fascinating, it's a documentary that then she turned into a book. And I had her on the show a couple couple years ago, whatever it was. But it's basically her dad got into Fox News, you know, or he got into Rush Limbaugh and then he got into Fox News. He became, and his whole personality changed. It's a fascinating case study how it all went down. And she wrote this book about it. And that's kind of what it is you're only getting your information from one source or a very small amount of sources, all very right wing, all very conservative, angry, ranting guys like Rush Limbaugh, Tucker Carlson, you know, Sean Hannity, those kind of people. And that's all they want is one news and, you know, Newsmax and OANN and all that kind of stuff. That's where they're getting their information. and it's all boom, it's coming down the pipeline.
I mean, we always talk about like, how is it that like some of the most intelligent people we know are still Christians? And it's, I think the bigger question should be, how come Christians and the Republican Party and these forces that be target people with lower intelligence levels and target people with lower access to good education and lower access to critical thinking? Like, that's the more fucked up part. Because like, I remember like my family, we were missionaries, right? And I remember my dad having this epiphany at one point, and like, he shared it with us, and he was like, he realized that the people we were serving and trying to convert, like, even though they were poorer than us and maybe didn't have as much education, they were just as intelligent and just as smart. And so like, he had this realization with his best friend out there who had an eighth grade education. He dropped out of school at eighth grade, started working in the trades. That's what a lot of people in Mexico do. They just don't go to high school necessarily, especially if they grow up really lower income. And, you know, he was lower income and all this. And my dad realized, he was like, this guy has more spiritual insight and connection to the divine than I ever have. And I have a doctoral degree.
Yep. All these advanced religion degrees.
Right.
How
and
ironic.
He like had this like light bulb moment of, these people aren't stupid and they don't necessarily need my help to reach peak spirituality, you know? Yep. And it was like,
so arrogant, isn't it?
Yeah. It's almost like this like American arrogance that we just like have out in the world. I don't know.
Yeah. The world audacity needs what we have to is offer. At an all time right. high.
But so going back really to your point, I think a lot of that, you know, we were talking about the history of the Republican Party and the base, the evangelical base, you know, it all started with guys like Jerry Falwell Sr. Mm-hmm. What became the base that supported Reagan was his listening audience and mega, you know, mega preachers like him back in the late 1970s and early 80s. So that base became the Christian right. So that's the demographic, isn't it, we're talking about? Because when Falwell formed the Moral Majority in 1979, it was off the back of him being told, you know, we need your mailing list. That's basically what it was. We need to tap into that listening audience. And that's what the Moral Majority was about, is mobilizing that base to get them involved in politics. So that's the, I think, the logical outcome of what you just said, Molly. It's all about this long 40-year, 50-year process of tapping into that base.
Yeah. Well, Not to switch gears, but absolutely to switch gears.
let's do it anyway.
Yeah, let's switch gears.
Great segue, by the way.
Yeah, fantastic segue.
Okay. No segue. And now for something completely different.
Here's now for a new episode.
Boom.
So you have a book.
That was
out.
Just the intro.
Oh, right.
25 minutes of intro.
That was not the intro. That
we're going to really get serious now, huh?
Yeah. Let's get down to the nitty gritty.
You have a book coming out, and you mentioned before we started recording that your book is, what's it called again?
It's called Baptism, Third Time's a Charm, My Story of Deconversion from Christianity.
Okay, I'm just laughing because, like, how many of us were baptized more than one time? Like, raise your hand.
Yes.
Literally
I've got
everyone.
You beat by one, though, Molly. I've been baptized three times. You were only baptized twice.
So I know, I'm not as holy
as you are. Just slightly more spiritual.
Can I ask, really, because I'm fascinated by this, because I feel like I was baptized really weird. Where were you guys baptized? Like, how?
Some weird places.
You know, like, right. Was it, because I know, like, really, like, fancy churches have, like, their own baptismal
Yeah,
tubs.
We did.
You were baptized in a tub every single time?
No, the first two times I was baptized in a regular church baptistry. The third time I was baptized in a river down in Portland, near Portland, Oregon.
Very
I was
John
a youth pastor.
Real yeah. John Baptist shit.
Real Love serious it. Stuff. Love Freezing it. Cold, you know, the whole thing. Yep, that was my third and final baptism.
Okay. So was the baptismal you were baptized in, was it heated or was it cold?
The first two were.
Okay, that's really nice. Okay.
See, that's some fancy church.
I was baptized. So we had a house church when I was like super little. So this was when I was like 6 or 7, probably 6. I think I was like 6 years old. My older brother had accepted Jesus into his heart. He was 9. Yeah, he was 9 years old. So I must have been like 5 or 6.
Too young.
Yeah. He was 9 and he told my mom and dad and he was all excited. And like when he did it, all of a sudden all the pressure went on me that I was like, oh, it was my turn to accept Jesus into my heart. And I hadn't done it yet. So I decided to jump on that bandwagon. I'm 5 years old. I have no idea what the fuck is going on. I just like was I wanted to do what my brother was doing. And so I ran and told my mom, well, I accepted Jesus into my heart too. And I also want to be baptized. So they baptized us on the same day. And we went to, my dad had like, there was like a church in the town that he was able to like do a special service in where our house church all showed up. My grandma showed up to it. Like it was a whole thing. And he did like a service that was for all the baptisms. So he baptized like a bunch of people that day. And me and my brother were one of them. And the little picture, it wasn't heated. So the little picture, my lips are like blue.
My lips are blue.
Yeah. Very cold in the baptismal. The second time I was baptized in a baby pool in an open air garage in Mexico City. And I was like 15.
Okay.
Yeah. We also would do like, we would like go away with our church for like a day trip to like little resort type haciendas that had swimming pools or there was like a river or a lake. And we would do baptisms like that sometimes.
More authentic, isn't it? In a lake or a river. Mm-hmm. Oh, the ocean. I've baptized people in the ocean when I was a pastor. Ooh, okay. We used to take camp out to the Oregon coast.
That's kind
and
of
we'd
badass.
Always try and say that, yeah, the I ocean's the best, time. I think. Lakes, rivers, oceans. Because, of course, Jesus was baptized in the Jordan River. So that's what you should do, I suppose.
They called it a river, but it was huge. It was like a lake.
We had a gas tank.
Oh, you had a lake?
Yeah, I was in a lake both times.
Oh, right. That's pretty authentic.
We baptized my other sister in a gas tank. So someone in our church had, so in Mexico,
they just have, looking for random things you can fill up with water. Yeah. And they're like, that'll
work.
What
do we put water in?
So there, in Mexico City, in Mexico, the whole country, you don't have gas lines underground. It's, they bring your gas to you in a truck and they fill up this big, huge tank that sits on top of the house.
Right. And like a propane tank.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and then that's your cooking gas and what you use to heat your water. So, there was like an old gas tank that was not being utilized. They cleaned it out. They cut it in half and then put like sealed it on the inside. It was like this black tar seal stuff. And then we filled that with water and used that as a baptismal a few times.
Makes a great baptistry.
Yeah. Being like, I was baptized in a gas tank. Like
super hipster.
I have superpowers.
Yeah.
Hey, we know that deconstructing religious trauma is hard and can feel heavy when you're doing it on your own. We get it. We're right here with you in this process. The one thing we can always go back to is getting quality therapy with a licensed mental health professional. Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest leading therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 25,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy.
That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom picked for you. You'll have more scheduling flexibility at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/cheers. That's better, HELP.com/cheers.
Well, my second one, we had by the church I grew up in, that's when I had my first baptism. But by the time we built a new building down the street, we put the ultimate baptistry in. It's one of those ones with a glass panel on the front, you know, so you can actually see the water inside from seats in the congregation.
So you could watch the whole thing.
It wasn't quite that high.
You could see their legs and feet. You're like, ooh, the pastor's got like something on his toe.
clip those yellow toenails, pastor.
Amazing. Wow,
baptism is such an interesting thing. Like, I feel like
it
baptism,
really is.
We would have like special services for baptism. Like it'd be like all like everyone would, okay, we're all going to baptize everyone on this date. Do a special
and it wasn't necessarily Sunday for you, was it? Or was it always a Sunday?
Yeah, this is the weird thing. I talk about this in the book that my first baptism, it was after I'd seen that movie, A Thief in the Night, back in early, mid-1970s. They showed it in our church. And I was terrified that I was going to miss the rapture. You know,
How
I was going to be left
you?
Behind. I was about 10 at the time.
Oh my gosh.
So early mid-1970s.
Traumatizing shit at those ages.
Yeah.
Our parents were like, it's a Christian movie. You can watch it. And you're like, we should.
No.
Yeah.
Dude, left.
Well, especially because we were being told it was real. It's not like showing your kid a scary movie and being like, this isn't real. It's all actors and it's fake. We were shown those movies and they were like, this shit is going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, no, that makes it worse.
I believed it. I was terrified. I went to see the pastor a couple weeks later and said, you know, I don't think I'm a real Christian. I might miss the rapture if I can get left behind. What do I need to do? And he basically said, get you baptized. And that's the other important thing. I was raised in the Church of Christ denomination, which taught that in order to be saved, you had to be baptized. That was basically equated with salvation. It's called baptismal regeneration. And so then the second time was about 3 years later, we'd moved down the street to the new building. And I was having a real hard time living the victorious Christian life and all the rest of it. And I went to the next pastor who was installed there at the new building. And the long story is that he said, look, your first baptism just didn't take. We need to do it again.
No.
You know? So
it didn't take.
Why
would they say that?
Something wasn't right.
Though?
The formula wasn't right.
How did they decide that it didn't take? What were you doing something like that?
They're not getting money for this, are they?
What are they getting from this? Like, I want to know the catch. Like, how do they know it didn't take?
Yeah, that's weird to me.
Well, because I was clearly struggling, you know. So the solution
they were
was
just finding a reason.
It hadn't worked for whatever reason.
They didn't just come up to you randomly and be like, "Sorry,
this didn't work."
No, it didn't take. Well, the story was basically, I was really having a hard time, you know, living that, quote, victorious Christian life. I started sneaking out of youth group classes and I'd go down the hallway to my pastor's office and knock on his door and talk to him while I was supposed to be in the youth group class because I was having a real hard time with the youth pastor. So in the months of sort of like therapy sessions, counseling with this pastor, I started unburdening myself, you know, this is what I think's wrong. I'm having a hard time. Anyway, he said, I don't think your first baptism took. There's a couple of problems with it. First of all, he said your dad actually was the one who did the baptism, and he was just an elder at the church. See, he wasn't the pastor. Maybe there was something wrong there. You shouldn't have a lay person baptize you. Anyway, the long story was he said, we'll get you baptized again. And so we did it on a Saturday in an empty church building. This is what's so fucked up about the whole story is that he just said, show up on Saturday. No, I mean, he met me there, and he had the baptism all filled, everything. Huh?
It was just you and the pastor?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yep. That's so weird, dude. Are you sure he wasn't trying to, like, see you naked?
No, because I was wearing, you know, t-shirt and shorts and all that.
It's weird that he wouldn't invite any witnesses.
Maybe he just felt like he needed to help you. I don't know. Maybe he didn't want everyone to know.
I mean,
that the
my
first
dad
one
baptized
didn't take.
Me. Maybe I need to get rebaptized. Maybe that's why I'm a rebel.
You definitely need to be rebaptized. You'd probably get in and you would burn because
burn up all the
holy water.
water.
You are a sinful.
Black
demons come flying out of the water.
That's exactly what would happen if any of us tried to get baptized. Now.
Yeah, the water turns instantly black.
I'll have like a black bath bomb in my pocket. Activated charcoal in my pocket, so it's just.
Boom.
Oh, that would be amazing.
I know. People keep sending me this meme of I'm going to get baptized with this in my pocket, and it's like a black bath bomb. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Amazing. Yeah, and it's
so
bubbling.
Because they bubble and fizz.
Yeah.
Classic. Yeah.
So we did something funny in my church. So the first time I was baptized, my dad did it. And then the second time, when I was like 14, 15, we were doing this weird community baptism thing where everyone would get in the baby pool with you and everyone would like lay their hands on you and the whole church would baptize you. So it was this like, as a community, we're baptizing you. It was a little terrifying to have like 20 people's hands on you while you're going underwater. You're like, are they going to let me come up?
Little triggering.
And it's different how long you get held like under the water too.
Yeah, how long? And do they hold your nose
I
held my own nose.
All the baptisms I did, you'd hold their nose and then you'd put your hand over their hand.
You're holding your nose and you're like,
yep.
And you come up. It's a
come
whole.
Right
do, they take, do you have to take baptism classes in seminary?
I never did.
You're trying to be a pastor.
No, but I think baptism. Everyone's just baptizing everyone. It doesn't matter.
They're not going to. Like, they don't take you through like a safety like technique class. Yeah. Like do no harm.
Did
protocols.
They teach that to you in seminary, Clint?
No, like, but we did baptism? Have. Yeah, we definitely studied the theology of it and all that, which is when I started. At the time, I'd already had two baptisms. And I had become a Christian then when I was, I don't know, in early 20s. So I thought, should I have a third baptism? You know, so
sure,
that was
why
the,
not?
Well,
why
yeah, because I'd already had two, and I'd studied, I rejected the sort of baptismal regeneration theology that I was raised in, but I was still obviously very much a Christian. So then the debate was, should I have a third baptism? And so I started studying it, and well, what's this whole thing? What's it all about? You know, so that was my next sort of quest. Should I have a third baptism?
So what did baptism represent for you then? Because you got baptized three different times, and each time it seems like you were at a different point in your faith and different point in your deconstruction. So what did baptism represent for you each of those times?
Well, the third time, see, I'd become a Christian back in about 1988, and I was in my early 20s. And then when I went off to Bible college, it was probably 4 or 5 years later, and I hadn't had that third baptism. And I was convinced that there was some kind of like spiritual blockage, you know, preventing me from going forward as a Christian. And I couldn't figure out what the problem was. And I went to our old church. We went up to Seattle for a visit, and the pastor was actually preaching on this very thing. And I thought, my God, here, you know, God's put me in this place to hear this message. And he said, basically, you'll have a spiritual breakthrough if you stop, resisting the will of God, obey what God would have you to do, and get that next baptism. And I thought, wow, that's clearly a message for me. So I went back to Portland and talked to my pastor that I was a youth pastor at the time. And I said, I think I need to get baptized a third time so I can remove the spiritual blockage that's stopping me from becoming a victorious Christian. And that was my motivation that third and final time.
It's so interesting. I kind of see like baptism is like so symbolic of like death and rebirth. It's like this symbolic version. Yeah. And like you're dying, your old version of you is dying. You're being baptized in the waters. You're going to come back reborn, new, fresh baby, spiritual baby.
A fresh baby.
What did they used to say? Something bebe. Like
born again.
Raised to walk in newness of life as you came out of the baptism. I remember something about that.
Oh, yeah, something.
You know,
weird
it's like
lingo,
a symbolic thing. Your old
like,
self is being put to death.
Or it's also people died, can see it as like, okay, after I get baptized, that's when I'm going to get really serious about my faith and really serious about the walk. I know for me, the second baptism was kind of like that. It was like, okay, like I went to church camp. I got all fired up for Jesus. I have this emotional experience I'd never had before with Christianity. And I was like, I need to be baptized to signify this new version of me pursuing this faith.
Yeah, it's a commitment, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like a public statement.
Yeah, it was a public statement. It was like getting that stamp in my passport. Like, okay, I've done this, and now I'm valid. My current faith is now valid. It was like I even see it now. It's like if I was to recommit my life to Christ, you know, let's say
which
I
you
do
will,
that, which I. But, I like,
absolutely
got a, when I
will.
Said that, I got a gag reflex.
You threw
going,
up in your mouth a little bit.
I actually feel my throat constricting. So that's not happening. My throat chakra is like, bitch, no, we've done too much work.
Yeah, we're not going back anymore. There. Right. Hell no.
But like, should I, you know, let's say I
hypothetically
get re-brainwashed and decide I'm going to rededicate my life to Christ, I probably would get rebaptized again just to say, you know, like, I'm back, everyone. Part three.
You just want to have three baptisms.
You just want to be as good as me. That's all
you
it is.
You just want to be like Clint, don't you?
I have some just like imposter syndrome right now. Like how is it that I am on a deconstruction podcast, but I haven't been baptized three times? Like,
there's plenty of life left.
I think I blacked out all the times I was baptized, honestly.
Yeah, how many times have you been baptized? You don't know?
At least two.
Oh, right.
There could have been more.
There could have been. How would you not know?
Okay, seriously, we did baptism so much as a church. Like, we'd go out to the lake like every
it's
week
like sometimes
or
I
something.
Was getting baptized sometimes.
So, like, some I don't know, man. Like, sometimes if I felt like it, I would just go. So I could have both of you trumped. I don't
you
know.
Might have dozens.
She's been baptized 17 times.
17 yeah. times.
Well,
every
Rachel,
time.
Do you, like, every time there was an altar call, you would do it just because you weren't
go
sure?
Forward. Yeah.
I did that for a little bit as a young person. Young person.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think we
like,
all did.
Like, preteen, I feel like for a while as a young person.
Well, how many times have you prayed the sinner's prayer?
So
that's the
many
other
times.
Question. I prayed it thousands of
so
times.
So many.
Thousands. Yeah. Every night, practically.
Who can count? Who can count?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Literally
every
thousands.
Time, I've actually never prayed it.
Oh.
Oh, well, you weren't a real Christian.
Yeah, I was never a real Christian, you guys.
That's what they say, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the classic sort of dodge, isn't it?
But also, as soon as I left my parents' home and like went to like my 2 semesters of college, I got my belly button pierced and my nose pierced. So
and you got tattoos as well, so clearly.
That was later. Oh, okay. But yeah, no, but the piercings were like, oh.
Now, look at her.
No, I'm not a Christian.
Right. That's definitely it. Well, I can remember I had a tattoo. One of my first ones, I've got this large arm piece up on my upper left arm. It's a big crucifixion scene. And I remember we went to a Christian music festival and this woman came up and just confronted me, said, that's against the Bible. How can you have a tattoo? The Bible says you're not supposed to have cuttings and piercings in your flesh. You know, and I'm like, I was telling my girlfriend this the other day, how fucked up that is that a complete stranger would confront another complete stranger over
a tattoo at a Christian festival. Ending.
But yeah. That's the way Christians can be, can't they? Just absolutely cruel and will.
And
vicious.
It's worse too, because they think they're in the right. They wholeheartedly believe
they think they're helping
that
you.
They are on the right side.
They think they're
so
helping you.
Everything you say is wrong. Everything they say is true. So their audacity is so maddening because it's like, you just think anything you say that comes out of your mouth is just from the Lord. And it's fucking not. Like, they just have no self-awareness. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, this is something I talk about in the book. As I was writing it, because I've done a lot of study on cult psychology, cult tactics, and the various ways that cults control and manipulate their followers. So as I went through the book, it's like every time I saw an example in my own life of where it hit one of the markers, I put a couple of paragraphs in like, oh, by the way, this is a category of cults. And one of the things, what you just said, it's called doctrine over person. And that's exactly what it is, where your doctrines take precedent over personal relationships. So Christians will trash other Christians because they believe that if they can walk away and say, well, you know what? I was right. What you felt about it doesn't matter. I told you the truth, capital T, truth.
Yeah.
Your feelings are immaterial. That's doctrine over person. And I point to many examples in the book where I myself did that to people, you know, and I was trying to be right. You know, and that's the collateral damage is I have no friendships left with some of the people that I trashed when I was a Christian.
I'm really grateful because I didn't do that.
Your only mission is to get the word out, right? Like that is your mission as an evangelical, to evangelize. So that's like this pressure on you to do, and you're not supposed to, like, you're supposed to think of their soul. You're supposed to think about where they're going to end up for eternity. And so as much as I know it kind of like stems from that, as someone who was a Christian, every time it happens to me, I still get really freaking pissed off, because sometimes I think Christians really fucking enjoy saying it.
Yeah.
Like they just love to tell you how they are so right and they're going to be in heaven forever and you're going to burn in hell, because somehow the things that I did on this 31 years of being on this earth were so bad that I have to go, you know, burn for eternity. Like it's mad.
I have a special place in my heart for ex-evangelicals and people who are deconstructing, who are like hardcore evangelists. I have a lot of compassion for them. Because I was never that Christian. I have extreme social anxiety. Funny enough, right. I talk to strangers for fun. But I would just go into freeze when I would have to like talk to somebody about Jesus or the Bible or like share my testimony. So like I would avoid that at all costs. I remember when I became a Christian the second time, my dad told me I needed to evangelize my little bestie who lived in the neighborhood. And like, I had a remembrance of that conversation recently and like started cringing inside, but that's really the only conversation I remember having where I was trying to like share my story and share the gospel. Other than that, I didn't really do it. I just kind of like, it was just like my family's lifestyle that they had. And I just went along with it and tried to make it work for me while I was there. But I didn't have this like deep need to share the gospel and save people, I guess. So I definitely feel a lot of empathy towards y'all who did do a lot of that conversion stuff, because like that those are some traumatizing memories for you guys. Like just cringing, like, oh, I said that. I'm going to have to go make my apology rounds. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, you guys like do like the 12 steps of leaving Christianity. And one of them is you got to go apologize to anyone you tried to convert. Mm-hmm. Like, I am so sorry. I told you those things, you know?
Yeah, we must repent.
It's true. Well, one of the best pieces of advice I ever heard was from an ex-Scientologist, and he told me the best way you can sort of deconstruct and reconstruct in a short time is to find someone who's never been religious and tell them everything you used to believe and what you really stood for. And he said, what you do is you watch very carefully the look on their face, and as they react in real time, that will give you an indication of how just insane and fucked up your beliefs actually were and the things you used to do in the name of Christianity, religion. And it's true. I've done it several times. My girlfriend, I'll try to explain to her what I used to believe, and I just watch the look on her face. You know, she's just like, I can't believe that was you. That was not the same guy I know now.
For me, it was definitely like I've had those conversations and those moments of like seeing my friends' faces kind of change when I'm telling them about the way I grew up. But a lot of times it has less to do with the religion aspect of it, because I feel like Christianity is pretty mainstream in the United States. Most people have like a loose belief of Christianity. And so it was more like the parenting tactics, because like my parents were influenced by like the Pearls and a little bit by the IBLP. And so like there was like some fucked up parenting things that were going on. And so like when I've shared that side with people and I'm like, oh yeah, like yeah, my dad did this and my mom did this and then they made me do this after. And it's like the most horrific, like the spanking ritual thing. And they're like, what the fuck?
And you're like, and now I'm funny.
Right. Yeah. They're like, what? That is so
laughing through the tears.
I'd be like, oh yeah, this like crazy intense mental abuse that would happen after we were no longer spankable. And like telling them that story, like this was just a normal Tuesday night in the Carino home, you know? And they're looking at me like, that's not normal, Molly.
Really
like,
messed up.
You need to go to therapy. I was like, oh shit.
Well, I'm interested. Maybe we can do this in the second half when we get into show.
This is perfect timing.
Yeah, because so I'm thinking we need to talk about religious trauma syndrome, rapture anxiety, those kind of things. Yep. So maybe we could cover that on my show in the second half.
Yep. So let's go ahead and wrap this conversation. We're not wrapping it, but we are stopping it on our platform. If you want to hear part two of this, you'll have to go over to Clint's podcast.
We're putting a podcast. Pin in it.
Yeah, we're just going to put a pin in it. Yeah. And
then we're going to take the pin out on Mind Shift.
That's right.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on our podcast.
Yeah, it's been great. I'm looking forward to part two.
Yes. Yeah, I'm excited to continue this conversation.
We're going to talk about how we were all traumatized by Left Behind.
That's right.
All right, guys. We'll see you over on Clint's podcast.
Bye.
Bye.
Looking for a safe place to deconstruct? If so, I have the place for you. We have a Facebook support group, and if you're not in it, you should absolutely be in it, because there's a lot of amazing conversations happening in this group. So if you are wanting to be in a community with others who are in the same deconstruction process, find us on Facebook, Cheers to Leaving support group. You can also click the link in our show notes and it will take you to that page. You can request to join, answer the questions, and become part of the conversation. We're looking forward to seeing you there.
Thanks for listening to Cheers to Leaving. We are seriously so glad you're here. Follow us on Instagram at Cheers to Leaving. Our sound and editing is by Cameron Smith. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe and share with your friends and others who may be deconstructing. You can also email us at cheerstoleaving@gmail.com with your stories about leaving evangelicalism. See you in 2 weeks.